This episode of the Westwards podcast is a production of Westwards, Western Sydney's literature development organisation. We'd like to acknowledge that this podcast is created on Darug land, and we pay our respects to their elders, past, present, and emerging. You are listening to a special series of episodes hosted by members of the Westwards Academy and alumni as they sit down and interview their guests from across Australia's writing and artistic scene. Enjoy.
You've got Mark and Paul from Westwards here, and joining us today for the podcast is Brian Estepa. How are you going, Brian?
Hello, everyone.
Brian Estepa, for those uninitiated, is an Australian singer-songwriter. He's been part of the Australian independent music scene for over 20 years, released 7 critically acclaimed studio albums. He's been touring the world for years, Australia, Europe, USA, the Philippines, with an energetic live show that's not to be missed.
Well, as energetic as a 40-something-year-old can have.
The reason we brought him here today is to not necessarily listen to a bunch of his tunes, though you absolutely should do that. It's on all your favourite services. Go check him out, Brian Estepa. But we're here to talk about the concept of lyrics as literature. And it's something that's important to Mark and I. I've released music myself under the moniker Clangmoss, and so there's some lyrical content to some of that music. And Mark, your thing is lyrics.
It is at thebartsmith.com.
So, start off super simple. Do you think yourself as a musician or a singer-songwriter first and foremost? What comes first for you? The lyrics, the music?
Probably the first part of the question. I think I'm a musician first and foremost. I think the singer-songwriter came probably later in the career, in inverted commas. Because I started off playing guitar, then I started to sing. So the songs kind of came after I'd kind of done my apprenticeship as the musician, you know, learning how to play the guitar, learning how to sing, being in a band. And the songs came after that. Because before that, all we did was play covers, really. It wasn't till later on that when I've established myself with an album or two and people started to refer to me as a singer-songwriter, and for publicity purposes as well, I guess I had to, from a record label's point of view, I had to be classified as something. So I guess I found myself being classified under that singer-songwriter category. So I guess I am now.
Right. So you don't feel it was something that happened naturally? You had to push yourself in that direction?
No, I think it was a natural progression. I think it started off with being, like I said, learning my craft with my instrument first. The writing of the songs came out of the necessity to express myself.
And it kind of segues well into the next point about looking at the themes within your lyric writing. Mm. A lot of it does seem to be circling around personal life experience, relationships. Is that a conscious decision to focus on those areas, or do you have a whole bunch of like environmental or political music sitting in the background somewhere?
I actually wish I was in the mold of your Peter Garrett's and your, I guess, those songwriters that can write from a societal point of view or what's current events. That's just never me. I think my songwriting heroes have always been the ones that cut deep into their personal lives or experiences, or taking on that third person persona within their lyrics and writing for other people from other people's perspective. So, but for me, I don't have an agenda. Because to me, only the music comes first. I'm not sure about you two, but I don't really consider myself a lyricist. In the classic Dylan, maybe even Neil Young sense, because the music always comes to me first. Maybe the last couple of years, the last couple of albums where the lyrics, I've been a lot more conscious about the lyrics and they come to me more before the music itself. Yeah, it's all personal. A lot of it's from my own personal experiences.
So that distinction between lyricist and musician comes from what comes first. It's not necessarily related to the actual content itself.
Yeah, I guess so. Because sometimes you when you have the music first, you'll kind of punctuate your lyrics to suit the music. So you'll hear like a dun, dun, like you'll hear like, and I went to the park and everything was dark. You kind of sometimes you're forcing yourself to fit words and lyrics to suit the rhythm of the music or the way the song is progressing.
Interesting, actually, because songs are built off structure. So yeah. I mean, that's a thing. There is always a formula to a song. It's a chorus, you know, you got your verse, a chorus, you know, pre-chorus, coda, bridge, you know, but that's all based on a, you know, tried and true methodology. So how the lyric actually comes into the music, I find
I think the still happens though. Like you still need that structure. But I find, for example, I'll write a melody and memory purposes to keep it in my head. I might just sing, and today I went out to that side and I went to the right and I ride. So you're just trying to find a phonetic.
Yeah, you basically, the words are irrelevant.
Yourself and your subconscious actually is a good measure of how the song will be, because words will come out that you probably want to express, but you didn't realize you want to express. It'll just come out because you're not going to come up with, you know, red and bed. Something else will get triggered based on the song or the melody. So you just go with it. So it's a phonetic, to me, sometimes it's a phonetic thing. I'm also big on phrases. I jot or now put on my phone or a voice memo when I hear certain phrases. So a lot of my song titles and song album titles actually are phrases, that common phrase that people say, like, "Wear your Sunday best." So one of my albums is called Sunday Best. Yeah, he came in with all the bells and whistles. All the bells and whistles, one of my song titles. Or I hear people say things. I heard someone say once, you know what, sometimes I just don't know. That kind of resonated for me at a time when I was writing an album. So that became the album title. So there's a few different ways that kind of lyrics or words, phrases manifest itself in song.
Yeah. And when you start from a phrase in those kind of examples, do you find then the rest of the lyrical content kind of flows naturally from that phrase, or consciously building around it?
Both. Sometimes you build around it. If you have a phrase, you know, Sunday best, the Sunday, like for example, one, that line or that phrase could just be a part of a one line of the song, but then so already you have something to build on. Like when I think of all, you know, say for example, I think sometimes I just don't know, I picture a confused person or someone who could be at a crossroads, you know, like it's an emotion. So you build off that. I think it's natural because you don't want to just throw away a line. Sometimes do you hear lines sometimes that you come up with them and you go, wow, where did this come from?
Yeah, indeed. Absolutely.
And what do you do when that happens?
Yeah, similar kind of thing. Just jot it down somewhere, but I almost kind of leave it off to the side and wait for a later piece of work that I'm working on to trigger that memory and say, yeah, that this fits together.
Yeah.
It's almost like...
So you're banking up. Do you bank up, Mark?
Yeah, I bank. I generally, for me, it's concurrent. The lyric and the melody, they come at the same time. Mm. And then it grounds out the song. And the song always has to be out of a theme. You can't think about beaches one day and then it's about, you know, climbing a mountain the next. Unless that's part of it. But, like, the lyric writing process is always about expression of what you're going through or what you perceive.
Absolutely. It's free therapy, man.
Yeah, it really is. I think it's an outlet. You know, when you go through experiences, part of it is the articulation of those experiences help you understand what you're going through. I don't know, I've always been amazed at how the brain can actually work on that in such a... I think it's an amazing expression, and all of a sudden, 5 minutes later, you could have a fully formed idea for a song.
Yeah.
Just because you're thinking about it and the words come off the back of that. So for me, whenever I write, it's always, or the melody, there's always a purpose behind the words.
Yeah, there's a personal factor behind
it.
But you told me something interesting outside before we came here, how you use your lyrics to express yourself, but you don't necessarily feel comfortable at times to express it, so you distort it, or you use production to fiddle around with it. And I find that really interesting because I think that's a common human trait, except now you have a mask or technology to...
Yeah. That's right.
You know, to mess around with it a bit, or to hide behind it.
Yeah, and it's almost treating it like an instrument in its own right. So in talking before about, do the actual words matter? And to varying degrees, they do and don't. And in some songs, frankly, they don't, because some songs are just there for a bit of mindless fun, but some, not yours, obviously.
No.
But some songs are really actually deeply personal. But you're looking at, as an example, if you talk about it being another part of the music or another instrument in a way, someone's not listening to what you're playing going, oh, he's playing D7, now he's playing other chord, oh, and he's doing that because it's meant to make you feel sad or happy.
Yeah.
In a similar way, some people don't actually listen to the lyrics.
No.
It's just simply another melody, another musical component.
Yeah.
And so
the word makes a sound.
Yeah.
And I enjoy that sound, the way it's sort of...
Or it gets masked within just the soundscape of the song, what's happening around it. I think today was an example today where I'm currently learning the song called All Along the Watchtower by, the Jimi Hendrix version, but Bob Dylan wrote it. And I never actually paid attention to the lyrics until I had to sing it. They sing disjointed at parts, but it's also genius. You know, it's actually brilliant lyrics. And then, but again, same thing. It's like, you don't, that's the beauty of great songwriters that, or great production, is that, you know, one part can stand out, but it takes stripping off the layers. And I think that's the beauty of a great song, because there's songs that I've listened to for over 30 years. I listen to it now and I'm still seeing all these other layers. And that's an example. Along the Watchtower, people just think Jimi Hendrix and his guitar heroics. But man, bloody Dylan wrote it.
Yeah.
People forget that. And then when you listen to the lyrics and you read it, I go, wow.
That's incredible. And so, yeah. And one person that gets kind of lost in the music, Shane McGowan from The Pogues, for me. Incredible lyrics. It's just some beautiful and aching stuff in some of the music, but it's hidden behind this layer of really fun, jubilant folk music that it's easy to ignore the actual meaning behind there. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
It's a classic songwriter trick. Just think about all the songs that are absolute depressing themes, but it's hidden behind great melodies and up tempo. Like, I'm thinking of the song Help.
Yeah.
There you go. That's a cry for help from someone.
Yeah.
Yet it's one of the most catchiest and memorable Beatles songs because of the great melody.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of
that's a great example.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like that's the beauty of a great song, because you can express yourself, but not necessarily tell people, hey, I'm in this funk, or I'm in this headspace. Hey, I'm going to be hidden behind, you know, a major pop progression. You know, and I think that's the beauty of it.
So it'd be interesting to hear from both of you, actually, because, well, Mark, and your lyrics they're front and center, because that's the whole point.
Yep.
And your lyrics are just clear for everyone to hear. You don't hide behind the distorted things or anything like that.
Yep.
But you talk about there's a lot of personal experiences that you're writing. How directly personal is it? Do you see that there's an arc of storytelling in anything that you're doing when you're putting your lyrics together? Are you looking outside of a song-to-song kind of thing for something that links what you're doing?
Yeah, I think that, like, I guess if you look at classic albums, some of them don't do that. When I wanted to do it, I wanted to do it thematically, where it has story arc that you could actually track. You know, songs would stand out individually, but over the whole, it's about a journey.
Mm.
That's the beauty of, like, lyrics are that you can express yourself within one song to say one story, and you can just map it. When you live through something or you live through personal experience, it's easy to sort of articulate that.
Yeah. And it's also watching details. Like, we both come from a similar place over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's hard to talk to people about it. It is.
Oh,
and anyone who goes through any, you know, pivotal life moments, sometimes you have a moment where you're just going to spill your guts to someone and it's over, but it doesn't mean that it's resolved or you've come at peace with it, that we have an outlet to do it, whether it's through lyrics, through song, through, you know, artists that paint, people that make things. Like, there's got to be some sort of way to get the bloody thing out. If we can't talk about it,
it's going to explode. So there has to be that outlet.
But then the whole world gets to see it.
Yeah, it is their interpretation. People will take what they will. Like, that was a great example about Help, is that that's an upbeat song, but, you know, other people actually delve into the lyrics and take what they want, they need from it.
Exactly,
you know? I mean, like, for me, I've lived by myself. It's actually one of those things that music is a saviour, in that you latch to lyrics, and sometimes when you're at your lowest, that's what will bring you through the storm, you know?
So is it easier to write about hardship than write about the good times, or does it seem genuine, disingenuous trying to write about?
I don't think so for me. If I'm having infatuation, I could bang, I got that. That's what I feel.
Okay.
You know, if I'm in love, I can easily write about that.
I agree.
Because it's based on emotion. It's not based on, I mean, unfortunately, like, a lot of the emotion that you latch to is negative emotion a lot of the time. But that's also beautiful as well, because there's a beauty in sadness.
Yeah. People talk, a lot of songwriters talk about how it's easier to write when you're going through something, you got something to say. And it's true, but again, like I told you, I feel like some of the best songs I've written was when I was in a truly happy state. But then I've also written, I think, some really good lyrics and songs while I was probably at my lowest. I guess it's a combination of the expression, but also your craft at writing lyrics. Or you can give me a topic, or I can give you a topic, and I'm sure we have enough up here to write a couple of lines that link to the topic. So it's the connection that people make with it. I feel like it's just natural for people to connect to the shittier times.
Yeah.
We wanna, it's a good feeling to wallow in the sadness sometimes, you know, like the great songwriters bring us there, you know, your Elliott Smiths, your, I guess, some of your Jeff Bucks, you know, like just those kind of songwriters that just have the ability to say what we can't say ourselves,
no.
Especially people that don't like write lyrics or are just music lovers or music listeners. Yeah. We want to, we cling on to those. Like you said, like you that's a solace for you. Like you, especially being by yourself, like the music, the lyrics take on a different meaning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They lift you up when you're strong. Yeah.
And I can see that exorcism in there. I know it's a completely different musical style, but back in the day, watching some of the death metal bands around Sydney, Forest Inn and Iron Duke, those guys that were doing that really intense and singing some really full-on lyrics, they come off stage, they were some of the most relaxed, lighthearted guys.
Yeah. And the nicest people.
Yeah.
Because they've had a release. And I think that's the thing about, the metal community. There was a perception of... they're just angry young men.
Mm.
But man, these are some of the most enlightened people I've ever met.
Yeah.
I mean, because they know, they found a way to express themselves, whether it's banging their heads, listening to heavy riff, you know, riffed up music, going, you know, like moshing, doing solos. Hey man, they found their release. They found their way to just get it all out. And you know, like to me, that's no different. Us writing these lyrics, no different to someone else banging their head to Slayer.
Yeah.
No, or to some, you know, D-side or some crazy, you know, metal. You know, to me, there's no difference because at the end of the day, it's about getting, not just, I hate using the word expressing, but it's just about letting out, again, letting out some steam, like you said.
Actually, on, like, for the Klangmos, languages, like, privileged to perform that. And it wasn't actually till I got the lyric sheet that I unpacked it, I was like, far out, this is extreme depth to that song. Yeah, I was just thinking about the distortion thing that you're talking about, and how the production made me sort of get away from the fact that once you actually delve deep, there's so many layers, you know?
And I think it's natural for us to hide behind things. When I first started as a singer-songwriter, I think she got me thinking, I didn't want to perform under my name because I'm so used to being in a band.
Mm.
So I took on a pseudonym.
Yeah.
I took on this pseudonym called Adeline, coming from a song called Sweet Adeline by... you know, one of the great purveyors of sad, you know, lyrics, Elliott Smith. And to me, that was a way for me not to be accountable to my own shit in some ways. Like, it's not linked directly to Brian Estepa. It's just this band Adeline. Oh, you know, so I'm not necessarily outing myself or what I'm feeling or what I'm going through.
Yeah,
but so it's a journey as well.
Yeah. So you're not performing on your own. You're using Bardsmith, for example. Yeah. Here's the difference. We're now, I feel like we've lived life, so we got something to say.
Mm.
But there's also still that insecurity amongst us, whether we've done this for 5 years, 20 years.
Yeah.
So we use these pseudonyms to play behind.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with it. I think a lot of people do that.
There's nothing wrong with it. But I think you've called it out. Absolutely, that's right. For me, there's a comfort in I remember Bono actually talking about that. He used to wear these tinted glasses.
Yes.
He said, this is my shield.
Yes.
This is my shield.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and I need to wear these to protect myself.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
But I think that's where I think there's the freedom for you two, which I wish I had. Not that I don't have it. For example, for me, there's an expectation of what a singer-songwriter or what people who know my music is going to expect. Whilst being the Bardsmith at Klangmos, you can be eclectic. You can go bloody anywhere. You can take it, and that's exciting. I listen to music, the eclecticness of it. I wish I had that. It's brave. It's courageous.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like we all have our limitations, but and even with your lyrics, like I'll read some of your posts, and they're going, that's some fucking deep shit there, man. But 3 or 4 lines, just teasing us. But then you'll do something else, and there's humor. You know, and I find there's a lot of humor in what you guys do, I can't really do that because I can't write a funny song.
Yeah.
It's all like, another sad song about, you know,
it's earnest to step up.
Yeah, exactly. It's just earnesty. So in the end, I end up taking the piss out of myself. I'll joke around on stage. I'll say something funny or self-effacing or, you know, like, but then I'll sing a song. A very serious song with a serious topic. Well, you guys have the ability to just morph into whatever you want. And I love that, you know?
But also, I think it's the age as well. I mean, who would have thought that, you know, you could produce most recent album, the production values that was very good, done by yourself in a, you know...
Yeah, the tools that are available
to do that is incredible, yeah.
Yeah.
So on the self-conscious kind of side of things, I found it interesting for both your perspectives, right? So you, Mark, not long ago posted some lyrics that you wrote when you were 19.
Yeah.
So I'd be interested in your perspective, how you felt exposing that material from your youth, from a far younger age, and then from your perspective, Brian, do you still play any of your early material? Is there any self-consciousness involved in the things that you're saying in those songs from far ago? So I know I double-barreled you guys, but who are...
Yeah, I think none for me, because like reality is that like, does anybody care? I don't think so. That's just universal at that age, is that you're always trying to identify and you always feel like it's you against the world. So now that I'm sort of a lot older, I understand it now. So I've got no hesitations with having that out and happy that it's out there.
When I think earlier songs, I'm thinking, I didn't really write a lot of songs till I was maybe about 21. And even then, I didn't really have a lot to write about. So I felt like I was aping a lot of shit. Or finding a topic. Not necessarily like a global topic. I'm talking about like, okay, broken heart, unrequited love. I didn't mind up necessarily going through with it. So in that sense, sometimes I'm thinking, it's not probably as true to what I was feeling at the time, because I was just crafting a song. But I still, in saying that, I don't have any, just no cringe factor for me playing those older songs or listening to them, because to me it's a product of the times.
Do you feel like you were trying to mimic any writers, lyric writers that you knew?
Oh, not necessarily, but just, it's more the style of music, so I'll write to suit that and I'll... I want this kind of British sounding phrase, you know, am I throwing this word? As I got older, I've become more comfortable in being a singer-songwriter, because lyrically, I felt like I had a lot more to say that's not just relevant to me, but I feel like it's more universal, as opposed to just putting words in to suit the song or the song style. Because again, once the song is out, it's not mine anymore. It's not yours anymore. Whatever you put out, you know, we might be self-conscious about it, but we're not self-conscious enough that we weren't brave enough to press release on Bandcamp or release on Spotify or put it on a CD or in a vinyl. Because in the day, we want people to hear it, yeah?
Yeah. We want a reaction. Good, bad, or indifferent.
So I find sometimes people go, I don't really care what they think. Yeah, like I don't really, like, you know, I think you don't care to when you're making it, you don't, unless you're one of those people writing for an audience. Well, I never write for an audience, I write for me. But when you put it out there, the reaction's more like, hey, I get it. Because I remember I played a gig after I released my last album, Sometimes You Just Don't Know. And I played a show and I was in the bar buying a drink. And a bloke came and said, hey, you don't know me, but I've got your album. And it really hit home.
Oh, wow.
And you don't have to say much, but I looked at him. I looked at his eyes. Bloke probably around my age. And I go, I get it. Like, we just looked at each other. Like, that's what he said.
Yeah.
He bought me a drink. He said, mate,
oh, wow,
thank you. You know, that really hit home.
Yeah.
And I looked, and that's it. He bought me a drink. He walked away.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the job done thing. Yeah. But it was like, that's when I realized there is some sort of people do listen. There's going to be that one person that's going to connect to one of your lyrics.
Yeah.
To one of your words, you know.
You've had that as well. Somebody reached out to you, didn't they?
Yeah, someone reached out. It was very odd because I try, and you said that this is human envy in any position we're not in. So we look at what you've been able to achieve, and that's amazing, being able to play your music around the world. But then to hear on the flip side, you look at us and say, you can just do whatever you want. So there is a lot of freedom. So I do that thing of when I create purely for me. I don't expect anyone to like it, but someone did reach out and it was incredibly affirming. And you can see how it would be easy to want to chase that. And you've got to fight that urge.
Oh, man, I have.
I had that the other day as well.
Yeah.
It was a young dancer that reached out. I had to Google.
Yeah.
They were. And then I had a chat with them. Absolutely lovely. And I was like, thank you, you know.
That's a really great point. But I also take that as a positive, I think. When you get that affirmation, you go, well, I must be onto something, but it shouldn't be a drive to chase that pat on the back, because to me, people who want that constant affirmation, the pat on the back, other people are probably insecure about what they're doing. We're all insecure, but even that extra insecure. But I think it should be taken as well as, hey, man, I'm connected. I must be onto something.
Yeah.
But when you're chasing, because I did that with, I remember doing that between my first and my second album, because I wrote my first album, you know, did okay. You know, not in Australia. I don't know, I give a shit, but overseas it did.
Yeah.
But something, wow. So I need to create something very similar to that for the next album. So I was chasing, so I wasn't kind of true. I was still true to myself because I was writing from my perspective, but in my head I was going, oh, maybe Triple J can play this. Or I can hear this in a song. And I did. And so when I was in my head, so I hear certain something, I mean, I was a tryhard. I tried too hard.
Yeah.
I hear certain songs. I don't regret anything I released, but I'm thinking, I can see what I was trying to do here. I was trying to reach a certain audience. I wanted this market, that. And once, I think that's, once you do that, get off that path. Once you start playing to an expectation, and not talking about record label expectation, I'm talking about what you, okay, no, that it is actually, what do you think a record label might want, or what an audience will want, or, man, if you can't do it for you first, like what you said, you do it for yourself, and if an audience picks it up, wow, that's like an added bonus, you know, not unexpected, but it's just nice.
Yeah. Have either of you worked on lyrical content with other people?
I did, but I didn't like it, so I'd stopped.
That creative process with another person.
Yeah, because really, like, that's the thing, when you write something so personal, and I think this is something I've learned, I've had to be more just, it's critical feedback, you've got to take it for what it is, but initially, it's changing a bit of your soul kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it was like, oh, no, yeah. I don't like that. No.
I think it's different. Yeah, it's different for you because, especially for poets or, in your, you know, in case you're learning these lyrics, it's not a collaborative thing in many ways.
Yeah.
I suppose, like, well, for me, I've been asked, I write songs for other people. So, and there's collaboration involved. And sometimes you have to take their perspective. So yeah, you have to write, or you have to say, you have to be, you know, you have to put your big boy pants and say, hey, when someone gets in, that's not quite right. They go, oh, but it felt right, but okay, maybe it's not. So I enjoy that. I think it's, for my end, it's probably good because I get to either step away from it and take on a different role, or learn how to take other people's feedback and make your songs or lyrics better.
So I think you've got the added dimension as well, that when you put words to music,
yeah,
it takes on a whole different meaning as well. Like, you get into that musical sphere. Yeah, it is. Feedback is important, and that does then dictate the words and the lyrics.
But it's like I said, there's that trust. I remember writing a song. I was asked to write a song for this person, and at the time this person was very young, and I didn't know at the time that she hasn't experienced you know, love and heartbreak. So as we were writing this song, I was saying, okay, this verse, okay, let's dig deep on the time you were so heartbroken, and, you know, your heart was exploding and the unrequited love, it wasn't good. Let's write from that perspective. And I remember staring at me saying, I've never been in love, I've never had a boyfriend.
Oh, man.
I, you know, she was young at the time, you know, she was 17. And I go, oh, and here I was in, you know, probably my mid-20s or so I've already lived a certain part of life, you know, that life, you know, experience that I was bringing to the table, but she didn't. So, okay, so let's flip it around. So I need to write from her perspective, or, you know, I had to take on a different role. And I like that because it means I'm not so self-absorbed in myself, you know? So now I have to take on this person's, you know, life experience and perspective. And it was great because then you go, oh, okay, that's what it feels like. I remember how that felt like.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you re-explore old feelings and, you know,
So then when you're singing other people's songs, you do plenty of cover versions here and there, do you feel that the lyrics you're singing from these other people's songs have to mean something to you?
No.
It's just...
No. There's some songs, there are certain songs that I sing that, you know, no, because I'm a performer.
Yeah, okay.
So my job, I'm thinking about remembering my parts. I'm thinking about remembering, but you're still taking the emotion of the song, obviously.
But there's a technicality.
I'm thinking about, I'm going to remember this. Okay, I know at some point I'm going to have to wait for Paul to do the breakdown. So you're focused on the songs. You're not thinking about the lyrics. You've also grasped the emotion of the song already. So you're going to perform it the song style, or how the song, the emotion of the song.
Yeah, you'll do the lyrics justice, but to do that,
exactly.
Technical aspects need to be met.
Yeah, exactly. You're an actor. You're so, like, you know, Paul and I are in bands that we do covers, and I love playing covers. But you do it originally because they connect to you, but then you also do it because you enjoy singing it, and you're not necessarily thinking about the lyrics all the time. Or it doesn't, it's not going to dictate the essence of the performance, especially if you're getting paid. Then you go, hey, I got these songs. I know it's a beautifully sad song, but man, I got 20 other songs to play in 40 minutes. You know, that's just the life of a working musician. You know what I mean? So, you know, some of this, to me, lyrically, it's very, thematically, it's very sad. But once I'm on stage and I'm playing with a band, I'm playing myself, I'm not necessarily thinking, oh my god, I was so fucking sad during that time.
Yeah.
Or it was under that moment, you know? So it's taken on, I'm just a performer. I'm out there to play it now.
I get that. And one of you mentioned, it just brought to mind, one of you guys mentioned Slayer earlier on, that concept of it's just a performance.
Yeah.
The guy, the chief lyric writer, I can't remember his name.
Yeah.
He's a Catholic and he thinks of himself as a Catholic, but he's got no qualms with the lyrical content because he says, I'm playing a role.
Yeah. Exactly. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Same with, you know.
Yeah. Not everything has to be, you know, from the heart. Like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and is that the beauty of art? Because it can, you know, morph.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It can morph to anything. And every person has a different interpretation of a song or music. Whilst, like, again, going back to our metal community friends, whilst the outside people thinking, oh man, that's so angry. Why do you, you know, like, it's such angry, scary music. But to them, it's some of the most joyful music you ever get to them. It makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's beauty in anger.
Yeah.
You know, same anger.
Beauty in everything.
Same. We've probably pushed our boundaries in terms of time availability here, but there's a whole lot of extra stuff that we could explore here. But we'll, Brian, thank you very much for joining Mark.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It was my absolute pleasure, gents. Yeah.
Well done.
Excellent. So if you want to check out, definitely check out brianastepard.com.
Or just, the socials, your Instagram.
Google Brian Estepard and it'll come up.
Yeah, something will come up.
Absolutely. Okay. And you can check us out if you like to. It's thebardsmith.com and claimloss.com.
Please do. These. I feel privileged and I feel great that I get to hang out with two of my oldest and closest mates.
Yeah. The Mighty White Gal.
We get to hang out and talk about something that we all love, and just the fact that here we are in our mid-40s still doing this, it makes us feel like our young selves again. But it's incredible that we get to do this. So thank you very much, gents.
Thank you for listening to the Westwords podcast. For more information on Westwords and what we do, please visit westwords.com.au.